This is Building Bridges. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
Workers, get up, stand up for the rights against the plutocracy, the bosses. An extraordinary forum with Senator Bernie Sanders, Mark Diamonstein, president of the American Postal Workers Union, Sean O'Brien, president of the Teamsters, Chris Smalls, president of the First Amazon Workers Union, and Jazz Brezak, our last speaker, organizer with the Starbucks Workers Union. They say we, the workers, are mad as hell, and we're not gonna take it anymore.
We're talking about how working people all over this country are beginning to stand up and fight back. And we're talking about the role that unions are playing and will play in the future in making sure that when workers work, they earn decent wages and benefits, and they have a say in the public policies of this country. Tonight, we have with us some of the very, very outstanding union leaders in this country. The average worker in a union shop makes 20% more than the same worker in a non-union shop. And the benefits, including health care and pensions, are much, much better if you are in a union. Came home to me during the last year because we have been involved in a number of strikes all over this country where large corporations are really squeezing their employees, despite the fact that they're making zillions in profits. And what really struck me was the importance of worker solidarity, where workers, whether they were in West Virginia or Alabama or California, wherever they were standing together. They weren't alone. And they stood with each other, and they got the support of other unions. They got help with strike fund money. In a world where people often feel alone and isolated, it is really important to know that you have brothers and sisters with you who are standing up fighting for economic justice. And the other area where unions play an important role is workers understand that when you're in a union, you're not simply a cog in a machine. You know, this is the year 2022, and yet in many ways, business relations with workers have not really changed. One guy's the boss, one guy's the worker, and in most cases, boss says, hey, you're fired. What workers can do in a union is say, you know what, you can't treat me like that. We have a contract, and you got to respect that contract. If you don't, you're in violation of the law. So it gives workers some protection and knows that they're not just at the mercy of an employer who can do what he or she would like to do. And furthermore, of course, unions have played an enormously important role and are playing today in our political process. That right now, perhaps more than any time in 100 years, we are seeing the incredible power that concentrated capital has over the economic and political life of this country. As a United States Senator, I can tell you that they spend huge amounts of money. We're talking about billions of dollars over a period of years in lobbying and campaign contributions in order to make sure they get the tax breaks that they need to get the corporate welfare. What unions do is counterbalance that to some degree in saying that, look, you know, there are millions of us and we're standing together. You got to pay attention to our needs. Unions provide some degree of political power. And obviously, I hope everybody knows that some of the most important social legislation in the history of this country did not come about by accident. Social Security did not happen by accident. Medicare, Medicaid, OSHA, worker safety legislation, minimum wage legislation, and many other important pieces of legislation did not happen by accident. They happened because workers stood together and the unions went to Washington or state capitals and said, you need to do this. Right now, we are living in a moment where there is more income and wealth inequality today than at any time since the 1920s. We're living in a situation where the top 1% now owns more wealth than the bottom 92%. 45% of all new income goes to the top 1%. CEOs now make 350 times what their average employees earn. And just during the pandemic, while working people died having to go to work, billionaires saw their wealth increase by over $2 trillion. So the point is that right now, given the economic and political situation in this country, where the very wealthy have enormous power, it is extraordinarily important that we see the growth of unions and that we see that union power make an impact on legislation which benefits the needs of ordinary people. The good news is that in the last several years, We have seen a real uptick in labor organizing. All over the country, workers at Starbucks organizing. We have seen workers at Amazon take on the second most wealthiest person in this country, Mr. Bezos, and form a union in Staten Island. We have seen white-collar workers organize at the university and college level. We have seen doctors, residents, organize unions to get decent benefits and working conditions. So there is a lot that's going on right now, and we're going to be hearing from some of the best labor leaders in this country to talk about what's going on and where we should go from here. So let me begin by introducing Sean O'Brien, a fourth-generation Teamster and the general president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. Sean, thank you so much for being with us.
We've come together to talk about workers, right? And we're living through a pretty special time right now for workers all across the country. With the rising cost of inflation, but more importantly, with more billionaires than any other time in history pocketing more and more money, these white-collar crime syndicates spend every waking moment trying to figure out how they can improve their bottom line and maximize profits. They want money. They want as much money as they can stuff into their pockets, and they don't care who they take it from. They don't care that working families go to bed hungry, or that singles mothers get evicted, or that exhausted fathers have to work three jobs, or that more people every day are facing the cold reality that they can never afford to retire. We know how corruptible these billionaires are. So what are we going to do about it? We're waking up, we're taking a stand, and we're going to keep fighting back until working people win this battle, Teamsters Union. We're home to 1.2 million hardworking members who knows what it means to struggle, to show up, put in the hours, stay unified, and win the day. We win huge organizing campaigns. We secure powerful contracts. We protect one another. And we've been doing it for 120 years, and we're going to do it for another 120 years. Right now, the Teamsters are preparing to embark on one of our biggest battles. We proudly represent more than 360,000 union members at United Parcel Service. And next year, we're negotiating a new national master agreement to protect and improve the wages, benefits, and working conditions of these essential workers. This is going to be a fight for the ages. When our UPS contract expires on July 31st, 2023, the Teamsters will accept nothing less than the strongest contract ever negotiated for our members at UPS. As a powerful, influential labor union, we have an enormous responsibility to leave it all on the field. We must do everything we possibly can to improve the lives of our members. That begins with a contract campaign that kicks off in August when 170 UPS Teamster locals across the country will show UPS how unified we are. You will see UPS workers rise up and fight back in every state around this country for the next 365 days. That's what makes this moment we're all living through right now so special. There is a resurgence around labor right now in America. We all need to stand up and support one another if we're going to win this fight. Teamster brothers and sisters nationwide are going to be there for one another every day of this contract campaign. We know how important this moment is. This isn't the gigantic employer that wants to put money into its own pockets, and we're not going to let them do it. It's about our people moving forward, not about their profits. Teamster members are the lifeblood of UPS. Workers are the ones who make these corporations so successful. And workers should be the first in line to reap the rewards. Real wages haven't budged in America in decades. Every day, we see more corporations inventing new ways to misclassify workers so they can rid themselves of any responsibility to the human beings who make them successful. It's greedy tactics like these that make it so necessary to take a stand and never back down and continue to fight. In 2018, before the UPS Teamsters negotiated the last UPS national agreement, UPS made $4.9 billion in profits. Just last year, the same company made $12.8 billion. Amid all this new money, in the year 2022, we still UPS employees are overworked, attempt to limit benefits and pensions and paying out to new workers, demand quotas, and pressure workers into 12-hour days in the face of COVID outbreaks and extreme weather conditions. Enough is enough. We have to fight back. Workers cannot offer any concession to employers that operate this way. And we're seeing that trend more and more. We're seeing workers across America, the flight attendants, the baristas, the warehouse workers, come to terms with how badly they're being abused. The Teamsters UPS National Master Agreement is the largest private sector contract in the country. And when it's successfully negotiated, it sets the tone for workers everywhere. That reality includes our friends at Amazon. Not Jeff Bezos, not Andy Jassy. These thieves are no friend to working men and women. I'm talking about the real workers at Amazon, the warehouse workers, the drivers, the feeders, the pickers, the sorters, These people know what it means to work. They have friends in the hundreds of thousands of Teamsters at UPS who perform the exact same jobs. This is what we need to see happen in Amazon all across the country. Not only do we need to bring workers together and support them to successfully organize, we need to rein in Amazon's corporate greed, its rampant expansion, and we need to secure powerful contracts. The Teamsters have spent the last couple of years staying on top of Amazon's disastrous expansion, which is built on a model of destroying diverse working communities and exploiting underpaid, vulnerable workers. Recently, we spent months partnering with community groups in New Jersey and New York to stop Amazon from building a new air hub at Liberty International Airport. That campaign, which helped mobilize workers and better inform so many communities about Amazon's horrific employment and environmental impact, finally paid off. Just a few weeks ago, Amazon formally backed out of its plans in Newark because workers came together to demand Amazon commit to offering good union jobs and environmental protections. But of course, Amazon couldn't commit to those things, so they ran away. We ran them out of town. We've been doing it across the country, and we're not going to stop. We're not going to stop at all. In addition to empowering workers inside Amazon warehouses to unionize, the campaign to rise up and win big must demand that we hold these greedy corporations responsible on all levels. We have to respond to how they're abusing workers. We have to watch where they plan to grow. We have to study their investments. We have to take to the streets, and we have to take our communities back. But we can't give up. They want us to give up. They want us to walk away. They want us to accept the lowest possible wage and conditions. But we can't do it. We won't do it. Every day in America, we are seeing millions of people rise up and demand that the rules of this broken system be rewritten. So the work is everywhere. Go ahead, put your helmets on, buckle your chin straps. This is a full contact sport.
Mark Dimenstein is the president of the American Postal Workers Union, which represents more than 200,000 employees at the U.S. Postal Service. Mark, thanks so much for being with us.
In solidarity, greetings. I was asked to share a little historical perspective in this conversation. Let me start with this. The pandemic has underscored that it's us, the workers, that make the world go around. And essential workers, transit, postal, meatpacking, farm workers, warehouse, delivery, education, grocery, retail, steel workers, airline workers, truck drivers, electrical workers, healthcare workers, and so many others kept the people connected, clothed, fed, housed, and cared for. When frontline workers suffered health and safety challenges, sickness, and too often death, massive unemployment, loss of healthcare, evictions, childcare challenges, the billionaire class increased their ill-gotten wealth by trillions of dollars during this pandemic. It truly is Main Street versus Wall Street and capital versus labor. Workers are standing up and fighting back, and we see it in rising strikes, contract struggles, organizing campaigns that have burst forth. And in many cases, workers being in advance of their own union leaders. The U.S. labor movement and its leadership today has largely failed to effectively and boldly organize the working class in battle against corporate America, corporate greed, the bosses, and Wall Street. Only 11% of the U.S. working class is organized into unions. And within that, only 6% of the private sector, down from a high of 35% in the 1950s. So organizing workers' power must be a vital goal and a vital mission. We need far bold and militant action, and the time is now. Let me share two examples for guidance and inspiration. First, the CIO, Congress of Industrial Organization, was formed in the mid-1930s and was built in opposition to the old AFL around whether the unions were going to put great emphasis and resources on organizing the unorganized and building workers' power. The AFL was focused on only organizing skilled workers, while the massive industries of steel, auto, electrical, rubber, and others were virtually unorganized. And with militant tactics and actions from sit-downs and strikes, organizing workers of all nationalities and jobs, millions of workers were quickly organized into unions. There were over 1,800 strikes in 1934, including the San Francisco General Strike. The famous GM Workers Flint sit-down took place in 1936. And in just a two-year period, the Auto Workers Union increased membership by tenfold. The second example is more recent, from the West Virginia teachers, education workers taking on the government in illegal and successful strikes that then spread around the country. and now the wonderful breakthrough victory at Staten Island Amazon. The Starbucks workers stepping up and winning. The Amazon workers in Bessemer, Alabama, Savannah, standing up. The mine workers at Warrior Met standing firm in defense of their union. The benefits that postal workers have today came directly from a militant and unlawful and victorious Great Postal Strike of 1970. Unions must lead the fight in uniting all workers around common interests and against the bigotry, race hatred, immigrant bashing of the Trump-led drive towards fascist rule on full display in the January 6th hearings. Divide and conquer is the age-old tactics of the boss. For us, in our unity, lies our strength. Second, workers cannot win without strong links and solidarity with our communities and our allies fighting for civil rights, racial justice, and a livable planet. This has proven crucial to our members of the American Postal Workers Union in our defense of the Public Postal Service and the campaign that the U.S. mail is not for sale. And if we're ever going to stop this terroristic union busting that workers face at the hands of these corporations anytime they want to step up and have a voice at work, we're going to need the community by our side. We should welcome the independent bottom-up worker-to-worker initiatives of the Amazon Labor Union under the outstanding leadership of Chris Smalls and others, and the Starbucks workers under the leadership of Jazz Bresic and others, and to welcome new ideas, independent initiatives, as well as the well-established formations that already exist as we fight to rebuild the labor movement based on militant struggle, organizing injustice, and a multi-union spirit of cooperation. And brothers, thank you, Bernie.
Chris Smalls is our next panelist. Chris is the president of the Amazon Labor Union and led the first successful organizing drive to unionize Amazon, historic victory. Chris, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, everybody, my comrades. We got a lot of work to do in the future. It's powerful that we all are doing this right now. To represent the Amazon Labor Union, wow. This has been historical for the labor movement overall. It always has an expiration date when it comes to these things, right? You know, we've seen the rise of the social injustice during the pandemic, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, seen the rise of environmental climate issues. We can go on, abortion rights, gun laws, list goes on of all these things and issues and systemic things in this country that we need to fix. But at the end of the day, with all these issues, behind that is people. It's people that come from our community. We are the ones that can make the decision if we realize our value. And being deemed as an essential worker in the middle of the pandemic, I realized my value was way more than what Amazon was offering. A life or death situation, my job description didn't say to work in the middle of a deadly pandemic. My job description said have a high school diploma or lift 50 pounds. Like many people here, like many people that work in warehouses, many people that take odds and end jobs, whether they're temp jobs, whether they're baristas, whether they're part-time, full-time, our job descriptions didn't deem us as essential workers. Corporations did that. Jeff Bezos called us the closest thing to the Red Cross. How can you say that when you have workers in the building, no PPE, no facial masks, no cleaning supplies? So to be deemed an essential worker and to be neglected and watch my coworkers get sick every day, to watch my colleagues test positive and be told not to tell our own coworkers in that warehouse that somebody's positive. That's just inhumane. And this is the type of situation that not only myself was in, but millions of workers still to this day are in the same predicament. So I said enough is enough. And I took further action. My letter, historical walkout, March 30th, 2020. 2 hours after that walkout was terminated. A week after that, Jeff Bezos, who was the richest man in the world at the time, making $13 billion a day, $9 million an hour, almost $4,000 to $5,000 a second, had a conversation about me, somebody who's making less than $35,000. That little old me can be on Jeff Bezos' one of three thoughts a day. Anybody could do it. He has three thoughts a day. But one of the thoughts that he has to have now is that the fact that we have a union in Staten Island. On April 1st, 8,300 people had the opportunity to vote. 55% of them said we want a union. It would have been a lot more had not Amazon played a huge part in union busting, spending $4.3 million, having myself arrested along with their own workers, two other organizers. That's probably Jeff Bezos telling them to stop me right now. Just tell them that I have to keep going, though. This is a moment in time in history that we all, as the labor movement, We all are in this fight. The ALU broke down the barrier, and now it's time for labor and the people to storm the door. You know, we can't allow what we've seen in the last several decades to continue happening. 2024 is around the corner, and I can tell you now, the sky is real gray. What are we going to do as organized labor? These tragedies continue to happen, from the mass shootings to workers being fired for retaliation. We're at a point of no return, and the only thing we can do as the working class is withhold our labor. And that's the most powerful thing in the country, if not the world, is for workers to realize the power they have once they withhold their labor. And one day, I'm hoping that in this country, all the unions in the country, whether it's starting with the AFL-CIO, whether it's the flight attendants, the postal workers, the Teamsters, Starbucks workers that are storming the nation, that one day we can all pick up the phone and say, let's tell all of our comrades, co-workers, colleagues, family members, loved ones, to not go to work until we get what we rightfully deserve. This is a call to action. Prepare yourselves for what we should be doing with the possibility of a general strike. Because I know the power that I have. I know the power that I have seen when people come together. And like I said to Senator Graham, this ain't a left thing. This ain't a right thing. This is a working class thing. And we all have to realize we're all a part of that, whether you're employed or unemployed. We can't allow this window of opportunity to close, to pass, because there's a war going on outside against us, against organized labor. Billions of dollars are being used against us. So we have to match that. And we don't have to match it with money. We already proved with the ALU's campaign that we don't need money. There's no amount of money in the world that can stop the power when people come together. Time is now for us to stand up and fight back, because when we fight back, we win.
Well, Chris, thank you very much. Jazz Brissack, the barista at the Elmwood Starbucks in Buffalo, New York, the first unionized Starbucks in the United States.
And it's amazing to be here with all of you, and all of y'all are just, you know, so inspirational and have had our backs from, and we started the campaign in Buffalo last year as part of an industry project. We'd organized a coffee shop called Spot Coffee a few years before. Those workers had overcome initially intense union busting through community pressure and solidarity, and, you know, had won a contract with $4 an hour average wage increases. And then we're asking, what next? Because you can't just have one unionized shop, especially if you want to, you know, change what it means to be in an industry that doesn't offer healthcare, that doesn't have a lot of benefits. And Starbucks, meanwhile, had been firing workers for union organizing, including one person that I'd gotten to talk to, who had started to try to form an organizing committee and then had been fired. So we started the campaign, and, you know, we had people across Buffalo supporting us, but we only had a few stores trying to get to that first election. You know, we were thinking we only have to win one. And then we have, you know, this confrontation with Howard Schultz and a company that claims to be a different kind of company, claims to be a social justice progressive company, but that was sending 150 managers into Buffalo to occupy our stores, to spy on us, to threaten us. And they wouldn't recognize, still won't recognize, obviously, the value of what our movement has been trying to do all along. Lexi Rizzo, who is the first Starbucks worker who reached out during the Spot campaign to Richard Bensinger, my amazing organizer, mentor, who I have to mention, he's a better organizer than Joe Hill. None of this would have been possible without him. And Lexi said, you know, we need to organize because we fight for what we love. And we love Starbucks. We want to make it the best company that it can possibly be. It can only be the best that it can be when we have a voice and a real ability to influence it. So fast forward to December of last year when we won the first store, and immediately people across the country started organizing. Michelle in Mesa, Maggie in Knoxville, Tyler and Josie in California. So many people started their own campaigns and have organized partner to partner and become the organizers for their regions. And in response, Starbucks has unleashed an incredible scorched earth union busting onslaught. As unbelievable as it might seem, from sending in, you know, what they called the Buffalo SWAT team into our city, and are now blanket threatening the entire country, from firing the entire organizing committee in Memphis with amazing leaders like Nikki and Nebretta, who've continued to organize and to help other partners overcome the fear that their own firings created. And now the threats are even more blanket. You know, you complain about safety, you go on strike over a grease trap that's overflowing your store and, you know, sending maggots into your store and smells like a dead animal. Well, we're going to close your store. That's what they did to our Ithaca partners in the first city to have all of the Starbucks unionized. And they've been escalating that across the country. You talk about unionizing, then they're going to not give you the benefits that they announced in order to try to get us to vote no, that they're rolling out this next month, but that they're excluding unionizing partners from in pure retaliation. But we're going to win. Why are we going to win? Because Starbucks has all the power and all the money and Littler Mendelson and an army of support managers that they can send in to write people up for being late in on days in advance of when they were actually written up. They can, you know, police the color of our jeans or the color of the ink in the pens that we're using to write in the records books. But we have the labor movement behind us and we have all the solidarity. My favorite line of Solidarity Forever is, our hands is placed a power greater than their hoarded gold. And that's exactly what we have. It was a boycott that, you know, changed Spot Coffee from a company that was firing workers for just mentioning the word union to a company that gave our first wage proposal in negotiations and had t-shirts talking about how, you know, they're now committed to social justice. So I think Starbucks is capable of the same thing, but it's going to take all of us holding them accountable. We have a pledge that many of you have already signed, thank you, saying no contract, no coffee. We're not sure exactly what those actions are going to look like yet, but we're trying to enlist everyone's support so that, you know, we have the people when it comes time to really call the question on Starbucks. We need to make it socially unacceptable to be a union buster. And, you know, this was never about just Starbucks. This is about organizing all of the unorganized workers across the country. There's no such thing as an unorganizable workplace. There's only workplaces that haven't been organized yet. And I was drawn to the labor movement by Eugene Debs and the IWW, and their slogan in 1917 was get on the job and organize. And we're trying to carry on the legacy that by continuing to organize and continuing to fight for these same rights and to change our industry. So please get involved, get on the job and organize. And thank you for everything you're doing to support Starbucks Workers United and the labor movement.
You were listening to Jazz Brezac, organizer and of the newly formed Starbucks Workers Union, championing Marx's challenge to workers of the world, to unite as we have nothing to lose but our chains and a world to win.
To support the Starbucks Workers Union, go to sbworkersunited.org, sbworkersunited.org.
For Bernie Sanders, Mark Diamonstein, president of the American Postal Workers Union, Sean O'Brien, president of the Teamsters, Chris Smalls, president of the First Amazon Workers Union, and Jazz Brezac, our last speaker, organizer with the Starbucks Workers Union. What an exciting group of labor leader organizers organizing the workers class, because again, workers of the world, unite. We do have nothing to lose but our chains. Agitate and organize for the empowerment of the working class. This is Building Bridges. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
And we thank you for listening. Stay strong.